Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Things do require context. Like, we're only where we're at because we weren't there.
Weren't always there.
Right.
And they say it's like a pendulum swing moment because, like, it's so awesome that we're overcorrecting. I just hope that we don't go too far backwards because there's you always swing until you meet a stasis in the middle.
A generation under me that like would feel that I'm pretty body pos, but like
pretty body pos.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure I'm still like, body positive.
Not sure that I love in a bralette. That's fun.
Like for my boyfriend, we're sleeping or taking the dog out to pee, but like that's about as far as I'll.
I'm like bold taking the dog out to pee.
Are you?
Yeah. I'll like run out in like a thong and be like, go piss.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm like, whatever. If somebody sees me, that's their fucking problem.
That's their win for the day.
That's actually so true.
Hold on, I can't see you. I want to see you a little bit.
See me.
Well, just like more
fun. I think I'm like the nudist like neighbor. Like, you know how everyone has one? Or you are the nudist neighbor. I think it's just me.
Let me just make sure. Well, just because
look at us. Just look at us.
I saw another clip of this where you were talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, yeah?
Table, so I'm like, no.
I know. That was in New York. So, like, there's slight dip setup.
It's knees.
Would you like a coffee table? We can always put this coffee table.
Hilarious. No, I think it's all right. I mean, I just have to, like, remember to be a lady.
It's hard, dude.
Well, if I cross my legs, you're going to get.
I know.
Full thong.
Full thong.
Full thong.
And we love that. As long as you're comfortable with it, we love it. And if not, we fucking hate it.
I'm super comfy.
Okay, good.
This is so cute.
It is cute, right?
Really good.
Yeah.
Really cool, guys.
Thank you. I didn't design it, but I do respect it.
No, it's a good setup, and it looks like your house or something. Like,
it looks profesh.
But also, like, your, like, living room profesh.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
Like, a profesh living room. Like, I'm very stylish.
Well, it's, like, that's sort of the podcasty
vibe, yeah,
I think.
It is. It literally is.
All right.
I'm going to try not to, like, gulp on cam.
I think so. I'm just trying to...
In your way?
Well, I'm just trying to find a way to see her, but I think if I sit...
We can turn this.
Yeah, we can chill.
Yeah, just get up for a second.
I don't want to cut off the coverage either. Don't worry about it.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think this is okay. If I sit like this and...
Okay.
We chit-chat and...
All right, cool. All right, good.
Yeah. Make sure.
Thank you, though. I appreciate it. The birth of the modern world society...
Yeah, I've actually never looked at what
they're what just blue. Purple. They just Dave Barry turns 40. That's actually really funny.
Oh yeah. Is it The Tale of Glenn?
I'm like, have I read any of these Don Quixote? I think I read that in high school.
Genji? Oh my god, I'm like dyslexia so bad. I just had to read that like four times and each time it was like a different book to me.
You know what? A cousin of mine, obviously dyslexia is not like a new concept to me. But my cousin's daughter is dyslexic, but is recently diagnosed, as in, like, I would say the last 3 years. She's 16 now. And her whole grades, like, everything, once they figured out that she was, like, you know, because she would work really hard, really good kid, like, tried, and, like, which I'm sure is a story with a lot of dyslexic kids.
Yeah, it fucking sucks, dude.
And then she was, like, letters, like, turn upside down on me, like, all this. And I was, like, I'm so fascinated by those computer programs where they, like,
show you
what it's like. Like, I'm, like... That must be maddening.
I know. You know what's crazy about those programs is I always wonder what it's actually like for other people to see it because it just looks the same.
It looks
to
like,
me.
That's
so. I'm just like, yeah. I mean, I'm assuming this is working because you guys are reacting to it. But
when you were like learning to read, did it like? I mean, you didn't know what you were looking at was different from anybody else was looking.
Yeah,
because you were little.
Yeah,
but like. I don't even know what the question is I'm asking. Like, was it, it must have been hard to concentrate on the words on the page. But did it, like, I guess in a like a not delicate way. Did it drive you crazy?
It drives me fucking crazy now.
Now.
Yeah. No.
And as a kid, it's just front. Now
you're like,
you know.
What the hell? Yeah. Now I know. I got diagnosed really early because mine's so bad. Oh. Okay. They were like, oh shit. But yeah, like I used to write paragraphs like this and then inverted and then the right way. And I couldn't tell the difference. So my teachers were like, something's fucking wrong with our brain. What the
Whoa.
Hell?
But yeah. That's, but now think about it. Like actually.
It's kind of cool.
Your brain is amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, you guys can't read in every direction.
Read in every direction.
It's kind of lame, actually. I had to learn cursive first. It's easier for dyslexic people.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Because like the problem with dyslexia is like a B and a D and a 9 and a 6. They're all the same fucking thing from different directions. But sure. Cursive, they're all different. So it makes it a lot easier. Because if it's moving around, you can still identify what letter it is.
Oh my God, you just lit. I'm the blown mind emoji right now. Yeah. Like, you just blew my mind.
There's a lot of things that people don't like think about in those terms. Like,
didn't know if we were gonna talk about dyslexia on this.
And TI and stuff right. From completely different angles. Same word.
Same
really confusing.
Word.
Yeah. It's terrible. Anyway, welcome to Days at Night.
Thanks. Are we is this going?
Yeah,
going?
We just started. Okay. We're going,
and dyslexia is the topic of the day.
Yeah, we're just starting on dyslexia casually, as we do. But can you give us a little bit of an intro as to who you are for our newer viewers?
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me. My name is Deirdre Friel. I'm an actress and I shouldn't say I'm a writer, but I've sort of write now. And you invited me to talk about some projects that I've been working mm-hmm. on, and I'm really excited to be here. This is so corny. Make it better when you do that.
Dude, you're not corny. You can be excited. She had a harrowing experience getting here.
It was wacky. I'm on a quest. Shook. I'm not myself right now.
Tell them about your quest.
No, it was just a bad Lyft driver. If you have Janet, just don't get in her Lyft.
0 stars for Janet.
It was a little. Janet was having a day. It was like Janet was my grandma and thought I was like riding in her back seat and should be respecting her car. And mm-hmm. I'm like,
And then threw a charger at your head.
Not at my head, but but in the general direction of the back seat.
Though.
And I literally was like. And then I'm like, okay, 14 minutes to go. Texting like, my
this
boyfriend.
It's gonna be a long 14
it's
minutes.
It's gonna be a long 14 minutes.
It's been brutal so far. Yeah, that's tough, dude. For to transition from that, like you've done a lot of really cool projects. You know, like
just a soft transition.
Just like a soft, super hard transition. You have done a lot of cool projects though. That like I was reading your IMDb and I was like getting excited and stuff because like first of all, so you did an ep with The Sopranos. That's fucking awesome.
So that was my very first thing I ever did on
That's
camera.
That's crazy.
It was crazy because I hadn't even done like a student film or like I'd know.
You just went right in.
And I only had gone to like theater school. So I think we had like an on-camera class like for a semester, but it wasn't even.
Yeah, it was like barely like, anything.
Yeah, I didn't even know what a mark was on the floor. Like, so when I got on The Sopranos, mm-hmm. they were like, she's not stepping on her mark. And then I had to figure out, oh, they put the tape on the floor.
They're like,
me.
Oh, that's it right
it
there?
It was very much learning on my feet. But the great thing about, I mean, obviously, aside from it being super iconic mm-hmm. and me being, I'm Irish and Italian from Jersey.
So it's perfect for you.
It was dead on. They were. Like all of those guys on that show, mm-hmm. before that show happened, they were like the Italian guy in whatever movie, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, they're typecast.
So then when they all came together, like the environment was extremely friendly and warm because—
Big Italian family.
Yeah, and they really valued like authenticity, I think, over like major on-camera experience for mm-hmm. like some of the smaller roles. I was actually up for a pretty big role on the series— and I think I ended up essentially not getting it because I had no experience.
So they were just like nervous. They're like, it would be a big risk.
100. I get it. It would have been, I don't even know. I was so young. I was like, I don't even know, maybe 19 or so. I was so young that I was like, you don't know at that time if you can deliver, you know, when they're like in cry now or like whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but I had gone through this like really rigorous audition process for that role. And Chris Walken's wife at the time, I think, or maybe they were divorced, Georgianne Walken was one of the casting directors for it. And she felt so bad about what I had to go through and not ultimately get it that she was like, we have this, you know, like small part on this episode. Like, you're going to do it. And I was like, oh, my God, thank you.
You're
like,
thank
I was like,
you.
I was very
She
nice.
Must have really liked you if I she think, did that for you.
But also, like, I think I, like, have – a vibe of Italian from Jersey, so you it was do. Like the right
fit. I'm also Italian, and my family immigrated into New York.
Really? Where?
Yeah, we came in through, like, the Bronx.
Yeah. Brooklyn.
Yeah, my grandfather lived in Brooklyn.
Where? In what part?
I don't know. He died before I was born, so oh. I really only know a little bit about him. But okay. So all I have is my grandma being, like, seeing Cardi B on TV for the first time, and she went, Daisy, do you know that Cardi B? And I was like, yeah, grandma, everyone knows Cardi B.
Right.
And she went, I just watched her on late night and I heard her speak and I went, that's a Bronx girl. And she was so excited. I love it.
But wait, so is your grandfather, the Italian side, is that Foco? Is that the...
No, that's a made up name. A lot of people don't know.
Oh no, I'm blowing
DeAndrea is the Italian like last name. DeAndrea. Actually, it's on my dad's side. It was okay. His mom, Deanna DeAndrea.
Oh my God.
I know, it's aggressive.
That would have been on the Sopranos. Deanna DeAndrea.
Deanna DeAndrea. Yeah. Grew up in an orphanage.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. Even though she had both parents, but that's like a whole different story. But
oh my God. Yeah,
but she came in like her dad and mom had immigrated from Italy and then they had her right after she got here. And then when she was like older, because she's not alive anymore, she went back to Italy and like visited all the spots that they were from in Venice. They're like very poor over there. But we didn't pass on any of the culture really. So now I'm trying to learn Italian to like bring it back.
That's a great idea.
I think it could be cool, right? I know I'm only really confident in like one sentence, to be honest.
Which is?
Siamo americani, mi dispiace che il mio italiano non sia molto buono. Which is?
I'm American. Say it again.
Siamo americani.
Uh-huh. I am American.
Mi dispiace che.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
That's it. That's
mi
it.
Dispiace
mi dispiace che il mio italiano.
I'm sorry, if my Italian's not good.
Yes.
So wait.
I'm an American. My Italian sucks. I'm so sorry.
I used to teach for this program where I taught in, it was like a theater program that I taught with when I was like younger. And we went to Italy and taught. And so I like learned a little bit of
That's
Italian.
That's so cool.
But we had translators because I'm like, I'm not going to be able to learn
like, I can't do
all these singing concepts. Right. But then we taught in Japan. And so I was like getting ready to go. So I'm like, I'm going to learn a little Japanese. And it took me like 4 weeks. And all I was able to learn like was one sentence was, Ego ga wakari wasu ka, nihongo ga wakari masen, which means, do you know English? I speak no Japanese. But apparently my pronunciation of it would be so good. It actually means, do you understand English? I don't understand Japanese. But my pronunciation was so good, then people would just start like
talking,
slamming Japanese at me. And I'd be like, nihongo ga wakari masen. Arigato gozaimasu. But like, I don't. But
that
all
sounds
like,
good though. I believe that your pronunciation's on
because
like,
I worked
someone who
so hard
know.
On that one sentence.
Yeah, you bodied though. You're like, this is it. I need this. This is me. This is, I'm going to rely on this.
Because like, especially in, I think when you go to a lot of European countries, mm-hmm. like it's polite that you start with, you know, but in a lot of European countries, there's some English where you can find mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't speak a ton of Italian, but
yeah,
I
could, well, like, people like look at you and be like, are you American?
Right.
And
right.
And you're like,
yeah.
Yes, unfortunately. How did you fucking know?
But
that?
In Japan, no one speaks English. Mm-hmm. And you're not even looking at characters that are like
similar, you know, where you're like, that you oh, like kind of, I can see the Latin root. Yeah.
So I would just have to be like, so like, please, please help me. I am not Japanese.
I don't know where to go.
I don't know where I'm going. I don't know how much this costs. I don't know what I'm eating. Like, it
oh
just
my gosh.
Like,
was it fun though? I've always wanted to go to Japan. It was so cool.
Great. It was super great. And the people were so great. And it was such a special experience to like get to do that. Yeah. So I was always really glad I had that time, you know.
Yeah, dude. Mm-hmm. What? That's awesome. So do you feel like you got typecast after The Sopranos because of being like tri-state New York kind
you
of
know,
Italian vibe?
I don't. I've done stuff like that. So I did another project recently called Somewhere in Queens with mm-hmm. Ray Romano and Sebastian Maniscalco and stuff. And that was like Italian family. And I have done that kind of person mm-hmm. a number of times because that is, I think when you are on film especially, or TV or film, you tend to play somewhere close to who you are. I think right. when I've done theater, you can do something that's like more different than you.
Yeah,
because
like
there's
a 14-year-old grandma on stage and stuff.
Well,
yeah.
right, but like also the audience is like farther away. So even mm-hmm. if it's not 14-year-old grandma, but like you could do like, you know, you're doing like Oliver and you're like, mm-hmm. hello, I've got a British. And like, it doesn't have to, you know.
It doesn't have to be so legit and people are still
and you
like,
can have like, people just kind of like buy into it because it's more of like a whole experience. But in TV, it's like kind of, it's like almost reading your mind, right? Yeah. Like film, because it's like so in your face. So that person is part of who I am. Like my family's from, like half my family's from Staten Island and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And like, so that's my people. And so like even this Ray movie, which was Queens, I was like, I'm pulling from my Brooklyn Italian yeah. roots, but it's the same kind of people.
Yeah.
And we all found that middle ground of like Maniscalco is, Chicago Italian, mm-hmm. but like there's similar values of being in a city and like, you know, like you just yeah. go, oh, sticking with your people.
Yeah, your big family, you have your places.
But like areas. Aside from that, I think a blessing and a curse that has been for me through my career is like, I don't think I've had like a type because I think the industry's kind of starting to move away from that because mm-hmm. like I think we have a lot of conversations about representation and what that means and like and how that's important to like have people who represent their communities. Yeah. But then I think you also run a risk of saying then people can only play that yeah, thing.
People get boxed in.
Which they are. I think, but being like a plus size or like a thicker, a juicier lady, I think a lot of my career people tried to put me in that box. Mm-hmm. But I think inherently with that box comes the idea that you must have low self-esteem if you look like this, or you must have low confidence. If like you choose to make your body be like that, and I never walk in a room
and feel like that
in that way.
Because why the hell would you?
But I think that sort of was like has been a perception for larger people.
And it's also like, I always think about that with character actors. Mm. I feel like there's something that happens like every few years or so, or every other career, there'll be like a character actor who usually does funny roles, self-deprecating roles, and then they'll do something really serious or like super creative.
Yeah.
And it gets rave reviews and people are like, oh my God, I had no idea that
they could do it.
They could do it and they had that in them. And with character acting in particular, you're playing such like a caricature every single time in different directions that like, of course this is somebody who can act. Like this is a very specific style of acting that
that's such a good, I never thought of it that way. I think I always thought of it like when you would like Steve Carell, who everyone always mm-hmm. knew to be like so funny. And then they were like, oh, that guy can act, right?
Yeah.
I think it's also when people have a really tremendous sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I think humor is a real understanding of humanity. And then like dramatic acting is also like essential, real, like humanity, right? Yeah. So it's like, if you can make, like, what do all most women say when you're like dating someone? You go, I just want someone who makes me laugh.
Yeah, I want someone, a funny guy.
Because also, like, because that's a connection. When you laugh with somebody, it's like,
you're in tune.
We understand something together. We have a similar view, or like, oh, that's so interesting that you see the world that way. It's like a link. Yeah, yeah. Maybe in tune is a great way to put it. So I think that I always thought of it as humor. But you seeing it as them, like them approaching these big characters, of course they can approach more serious characters. I'm like, yeah sure, right?
Because people think, I think with like the jokey roles, people think it's easy because it's like not taken super seriously. But that's the reason why it's coming across so like effortless and silly is because they're doing exactly what they're being instructed to do.
Yeah, or what they're just like naturally good at doing. You know what
I mean?
They
like know what the role is and they're delivering on that.
That's a great point. That's really interesting.
And so of course they can do that in other directions. You know? And like I love whenever people
are you
do
an
something
actress
different.
Too?
I went to acting school.
Where did you go?
I went to UH.
Wait, where's
Houston?
Okay, cool.
But I never went anywhere with it. I ended up like leaving school. But like I still love I love entertainment. I love actors.
Sure.
Actors are such interesting, dynamic people and you have to tap into so much.
Yeah, I think I've always like been very grateful that like in a way it, I don't want to say it's a form of therapy, but it can be therapeutic because you get to live out or like imagine circumstances mm-hmm. in a safe way, right? Where you're like something traumatic, but then they say cut or like then the play ends and you bow and like you, I've learned for myself that when I have to do very heavy stuff, I did a series called New Amsterdam, which is like a mm-hmm. really great hospital show that was on NBC. And I had this episode where my character was having a panic attack. There was like a, a shooter in the hospital. And so my character was like in a closet and I was like, you know.
Super real situation, yeah.
But yeah, and we had to film, all my scenes were in like one day because we were in one location. So it was like 9 hours of like varying stages of this
being on the
panic
edge.
Attack. Right. And you'd have breaks, of course, because they'd go, you know, change the cameras.
Gotta take your five.
Yeah. But you're still like drumming that up. And like the next week, my body had these like random panic attacks because like I think when you pretend something, your body doesn't know the difference between when it's like fake or when it's real. And I've learned now when I have to do something like that, really strenuous or extreme, I have to like, as much as I can, carve out like huge, like take a big salt bath that night and like the next day eat like really good and like keep the windows, like the shades drawn and light candles. Like I have to do so much like gentle sensory stuff, like maybe not even watch TV. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, just like be understimulated if anything.
Way as much, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Way understimulated so that, and put as much good in my body, like water, greens. Yeah. So I'm just telling my body like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Everything's okay. Or like if you're feeling residuals from that, it's the much faster way for me to process it than if I just try to like slam into the next thing. But sometimes you don't have that choice. You're going into something else. So I'll just try to build in little, even like on the drive home from set, I'll like put like something soothing on or like just focus on breathing for that 40-minute drive or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that is there's two things that I find super interesting. One, I went to this thing with the Better Internet Initiative like last year. They did this really cool event where they brought in all different types of creators and people from the UN alike. And they brought in this one musician who dealt with PTSD patients.
Wow.
And he would go in to hospitals during COVID and he would play music for just really short 2-minute intervals every hour for the staff. And they saw dramatic drops in the staff getting PTSD.
Wow.
Just from like 2 minutes. So when you take your five, if you listen to music, that can really help with your neural pathways so that you don't have these panic attacks.
I also saw, by the way, I have had panic attacks, but that's a specific experience of like, because I was drumming up like that specific physical behavior.
Yeah.
Then it like, my body was like, oh, we're having panic attacks.
Yeah.
But I read a study a couple years ago about Alzheimer's patients and dementia and how they lose the ability to like connect and speak. And this woman was going in and realizing because they withdraw, people withdraw from them. So they weren't getting physical touch or people weren't talking to them. So she would sing them songs from their childhood and like touch them. And as she was doing this, I was like watching like recordings of this study. You could see the patients like slowly like coming to and then trying to like sing with her, people who had been nonverbal for years. So music 100%.
Yeah, music is really, it locks
taps
in.
Into something.
And with like, I think it's so interesting what you're talking about with like your body not knowing the difference between it being real and fake, because I've never really thought about that because I never had to play any super heavy roles like that. I didn't get typecast in, or I did get typecast as like sort of like flirty, fun, like girl for everything. And I was like, what the hell? Let me be dark. But that makes sense though, because like your vagus nerve in your stomach, you know, when you know when someone really like hurts you?
You feel it physically.
Yeah, and you feel the waves all over your body of like that like searching through your pores almost.
Well, think about like anytime anyone talks about what happened, like, I had a gut feeling about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like I have butterflies in my stomach.
It's your second brain.
Or like just like I feel lightheaded or like your body, all of the expressions we have are relating to our body like physically responding to our emotional lives.
Yeah, your emotional state. And like when you feel that like wave across your skin, I just learned like that's your nervous system looking for the injury. So like when someone
hurts you, like a body scan.
Yeah, it's a body scan. It's a literal body scan. So when someone hurts you really, really bad and you feel that, you know that you're so upset that your body thinks you must have been mortally wounded.
Holy, can I say shit?
Yes,
holy
you
shit,
can.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? So like I
of course it does. Of course.
Yeah. And so like when you're faking and your body doesn't know the difference, it's of course taking it seriously because you're still in that state of like breathing heavy, being upset, because like that's the only way to get there for your role.
Some actors don't have to do that. Like I've worked with actors who are like,
they just,
oh, are you ready? And it's as real as anything. I think as I get older and like I know myself more, I don't have to always like kill myself with preparation. Because sometimes once I can get it going, then like it, I don't have to like keep.
Yeah, keep holding it.
Right, drumming it up, right? But some actors can just cut. Yeah, that was good. Oh, you want to do it one more time? All right, hold on.
That's so
okay, amazing. And like some people are just really there with it and it can be very real. And some people just tackle it very technically. Mm-hmm. And that, I think it's also a matter of what works for each person, of mm-hmm. course, right? What any person's like process is. But then also ultimately, what's it about? It's really, yeah. what's the audience buying? Like does, if I am like making myself like so upset and crying my eyes out, that might make you upset, which is the point. But if someone else goes, all right, hold on, just put some Vaseline under my eye, put some menthol.
Yeah.
And they start acting it there and the audience feels the same thing. What's the, is the difference that if they can get there that way and I can get there this way, like it's yeah. really about you guys or whoever's watching.
Yeah, it, how right? it reads.
Yeah. That's yeah. really what it's for.
What do you think about, because people have such mixed opinions on this, method acting.
I trained in method. Like mm-hmm. that's my Meisner was where I like come from.
Mm-hmm.
I really think anyone's process is what works for anyone. But I also think like, you know, the legal expression, like the right to swing your hand stops at my nose.
Yeah.
Like, you can swing your arms, but if you break my nose, then you've assaulted me. Right.
Yes.
So if you are a method actor, that's fine. But if someone else next to you is not playing the same game as you, like you're not entitled mm-hmm. to like force them into your game. But so the movie I did with Ray, he was also directing it. It was his directorial debut and he wrote it. So he was like wearing a lot of hats.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one day we were doing, you know, this big scene where he was like drunk and it was like very emotional and he had to be, but like very drunk at the top of the scene. So in between takes, he was like going in a corner and like listening to music. We would do like 5 or 6 takes before mm-hmm. he'd like check, but so he could stay in the acting zone. And then he'd come sit at the table and he would just start like, he was feeling drunk, like in his way and talking to people in their character names and like playing with people. And so I realized, I'm like, oh, he's being method. Like he's like, this is my way into this scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'll play this game. Like, so I started playing with him too. And then he was like, I was like, I get it. I get where you are. And mm-hmm. like, I'm willing to do that. Because it was not him going, everyone has to do this.
Yeah.
But I went, oh,
it was
I
him offering like an invitation and or accepting.
If I can jump in that pool with you and it's not interfering with me, then I'm happy to, like, because yeah. really that scene wasn't about me. My character had like 2 reactions. So it's really about him mm-hmm. getting there. So I'm like, if I can help you, like.
Yeah, why not?
100%.
Yeah,
but if
why not?
But if my helping you interferes with me doing my job, then I have to go, all right, let me stay out of your way. You know yeah. what I mean?
Yeah, you're like referring to like the sort of method actor horror stories that we hear sometimes of people.
I haven't had any, I've never been on a set with anyone who's like that. And I would be interested, like, I mean, I don't know if you saw Jim and Andy, that Jim Carrey doc. I would be very interested to see like how I felt, but I think it would also depend on who my character was in mm-hmm. the film. But like Power of the Dog, Benedict Cumberbatch
mm-hmm.
wouldn't sit with anyone. So like when everyone would go between takes, 5s, he made them put his chair like in a whole other place because he's yeah. like, I'm an outsider, you know.
I feel like that's like such like a harmless way to method act too.
But I so think they're like, all
okay.
But if he's not playing Andy Kaufman, like I yeah. wonder if Benedict Cumberbatch was playing Andy Kaufman, maybe he would have been like a prankster or
yeah.
And Jim Carrey got incredible results in that film. Like
yeah,
it's like spooky, out of body. Like, you know, Kaufman's family went to visit him and said it was like
they're like, whoa.
Going to a seance. Yeah. Like yeah. so I don't know. I don't know where it I don't
depends.
Know. People are making art, right?
Yeah. It's
whatever.
I that's such a good point that people are making art because I feel like method acting people really only complain about when they don't like the end result. Like when they feel
oh.
like the art is bad.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
I want to say that's fair. Like, I have to think that through.
Like, but the more I think, I'm thinking about it right now. I'm cycling through like all the method actors I'm thinking of. I never hear bad things about, and except the ones that I am thinking of right now, which is just one or two. It's specific projects that weren't well received.
Wow. And you mean like you think the method actor was unhappy with their performance, or you think other people were unhappy with the method?
Like, I think that if the movie had gotten rave reviews, people would have decided that they didn't mind it too much retrospectively.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, and then it's like, well, how can we ever know what the other result would be?
Yeah, you never really know.
But I think that's a really interesting observation. I have to think about
that. It's like a Schrodinger's cat. Could be, right? Yeah, yeah.
We'll never can open
we'll
the
never
box.
Know.
Yeah.
If the movie was well received, would people still think he's a dick? You know, maybe
I mean,
not.
Daniel Day-Lewis is famously method, and when he did Lincoln, he made everybody call him Mr. President, and
that's endearing to me.
Well, I know two people actually who were on that film, and I won't say who, but one of them was saying that like at lunch when they would have like the cast lunch breaks, he would be like, Martin Van Buren is such a muckraker, and they'd all have, like, aha. Like, he would be like, even oh, telling sir. Jokes of like the time, like,
sir, please beseech you,
which is like pretty wacky, but you're like, but again, he's bringing something that's like pretty
that's
astonishing.
Fun.
Yeah, that's it, right? So you're like, if I can get in that pool, I'll play that game. If I can't play that game, I'll go sit at the other lunch table.
I'll be like, sir, your charisma's off the charts. This is why you got the polls.
Sir, 4 and 20. Oh, wait. Oh, God.
Four score and 20 years ago. You made me laugh. But no, it's true though. Like, the only times like people complain about it is they're like, and the movie wasn't even good. So it was all for what?
Interesting.
You know?
Interesting.
Whereas other times, there's a couple people who have talked about harrowing experiences and they're like, but the film needed that. And so I feel like it does kind of depend on if the movie's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What if, for you, what's your like dream role? Like, if you could pick any, like, you don't have to worry about the rights, you don't have to worry about who's in it, like, you could just be like, and that's me.
You know, I think when you talk about like theater, then you think about dream roles. Cause in theater, people, they do new plays, but they do stuff over. And film and TV, of course, there are remakes, but like, it's always a remake, but different. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I have dream roles anymore. I think now when I say like, I'm writing stuff, like, you were saying before when you were in school, you would get typecast as like the fun times flirty girl, and you wanted to do dark stuff. And when I would teach, I always say to students now, I'm like, you can't be an actor anymore. Like, you have to be like a writer. You have to make
your
own stuff.
Everything.
You do TikToks. You like have a podcast. Like, you can't just be like, I do one thing.
That's true.
So I would have said to you, if you were like, I'm an actor, or you continue want to pursue it, write the dark thing that's you, right?
So true. So, okay, so...
So now I say...
If you're going to write the dark thing, like, what would you write for yourself? Like, what kind of character?
I feel like I have... So I'm writing a couple of projects right now with some people. Mm-hmm. And one of them is more, like, geared towards me, and one of them is more geared towards another person I'm writing with. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is... I have been fortunate that, like, by not specifically saying I want to do X, and like just kind of letting the universe guide me towards something like Physical, which I know we were going to talk about in a minute, on Apple TV that I did. Prior to that, I had said to my reps, I didn't want to do any more things where the character was described as like fat or overweight, because I didn't book it, and often it just was like, the point of it was because they, you know.
Yeah, like, you're the punchline.
The punchline.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not doing it. And they were like, no problem. And so the pandemic rolls around and Physical comes and the character's like overweight. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And my manager, who I've been with such a long time, who I love more than anything, is said to me, this is really good people. Mm-hmm. And let's try it. When you get to the stage of like the test, we'll say to them, we need more info. We have to understand why this is. But he's like, I just think these people do good projects. And like, I've never seen them do something where a woman is the butt of a joke or the fat.
Yeah, where it feels exploitative.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I do it. And I'm like, it is good scenes. It's really good. So I do the material. It moves to the next stage. So then they give us more info and let me read some scripts and stuff. And then I realize with context that the reason Greta was overweight was because Sheila was so thin. Mm-hmm. And that the whole point was like, it did not matter what body either of these women were in. They both were struggling with like loving themselves.
Yeah. They had the same issue that they were foils for each other.
And when Greta became empowered, like Sheila was kind of like, oh my, like it kind of was like, not eye opening, but maybe like almost shocking, not shocking. I don't know how to say it. That it was like, wow, look at this woman who's like loving herself and like exploring her sexuality and like.
Yeah, it was revolutionary to her.
Right. And Greta was looking at Sheila like all of season one, like you are everything that a woman should want to be. Like, why aren't you happy?
Why are you still upset?
So I think that then all of a sudden it became really empowering.
Yeah.
That I looked the way I looked. And every time it was like addressed or in any way on the show, mm-hmm. it was either in an empowering way or it was like, I don't feel great about myself, but for a
yeah, it was necessary. Good purpose. It had a purpose that wasn't like just.
I was never the butt of any joke. Yeah,
yeah, it was like actually relevant to like
and still getting to be like very funny, but never like ha ha ha.
Yeah,
you know.
And you know what? We don't have a lot of that in media right now. Really, the only other example I can think of, and it's animated, is BoJack Horseman. They have a character who's like depressed.
Yeah.
And when she finally gets a foothold on her depression, she gains weight and she's happy.
Finally happy.
And she's finally happy with herself.
Yep.
And that's the only time I've ever seen, like usually you see it inverted where they make it, this person's so sad, that's why they're overweight. And then they get thin and their problems are solved. And then this show depicted like this character was underweight from nervousness and stress and not taking care of themselves.
That's so interesting.
And then like once they finally like got medication that they liked and a therapist that they liked, now they're like at their natural stasis that they should be at, and look how great it is.
I think it's hard now too, right? Because it's like we had this very body positive movement. Mm-hmm. I think there still is some, but I think there's this like prevalence now of also weight loss drugs, which I know also have like
Ozempic?
Yes, which have huge medical benefits, which like mm-hmm. 100% I applaud, right? I really do. But I'm also like, what I think is so hard about that is like we're already so many young women, especially men too, I think, but look at social media and see these really idealized people. And what we're not realizing is someone has taken 800 selfies of themselves and then thrown it through, you know, 4 AI generators.
Yeah.
And now also they can afford to take like $900 shots. Mm-hmm. But some 14-year-old girl is sitting at home going, oh my God.
Like why am I not motivated enough to be that person? Why don't I look like,
yeah, just eat well.
Why don't I have enough discipline to be them? They said that they just drink green tea every morning
and now, then
do Pilates and they look like that and I'm doing that and I'm not getting the same results. I'm doing something wrong.
But I feel like also, I feel like I hear way less about body positivity now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like love yourself for whatever you look like. I think that does still exist, but I feel like there was such a...
There's been a pullback.
Oh, yes.
There's definitely been a notable pullback.
I feel like you are more clicked into like social media milieu than I am, but like I can feel that.
No, there has been one. I normally am a talking head on TikTok, and like a month ago I rarely do like a full body shot just because mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense for my content. But I did a meme on like my spam account, like where I barely have any followers on there.
Okay.
And it was a joke about like me cleaning the whole house. I'm like very have OCD tendencies about like organizing everything.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you clean things and then someone puts like a spoon in the sink and then you're like, oh my God. Like I was making a joke about that, which which I had put the spoon in the sink. Like, I made myself like one. And then there was that audio that's like, oh, that work and what did it get?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just standing there in front of the sink doing this. And that video across like Instagram and TikTok, it got more than 12 million views. And all of the comments were people talking about my body, which has never happened before.
Oh my God. Because
I never really show my body, which isn't by design, but I didn't even like think that that would matter.
But so as a content creator, because I know you guys must be driven. I have a number of friends who are content mm-hmm. creators. You're driven on some level by the numbers and by, yeah. right? So now you know that that helps drive your viewership.
Yeah. But I haven't done it.
But how does that make you feel? Yeah, because you go, ugh, it's like I'm using my body or something, yeah, right?
I didn't like it because I'm really known online for my brain. And
which is awesome.
Thank you. I like that about my content. And what people were talking about, it wouldn't have bothered me if people were just being nice and being like, oh, you look cute. What bothered me is that people were being so mean to each other in the comments.
What do you mean?
Because half of the people were like, oh my God, you look great. And then the other half of people were like, this is a body check, which is something with people with EDs do online sometimes. And I had to learn about that whole process. I didn't know anything about
that. So wait, people were calling you out saying, mm-hmm. You look thin to us, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they were saying that I was standing in like a fake way to make myself look a specific way.
Oh my
But my
goodness.
Spine is fused, so I can only stand one way.
Oh
so
my gosh, you poor thing.
That was my response where I was like, this is the only stance I have. But they were arguing with each other and it was getting so aggressive because obviously like it's a point of real insecurity for most sure. people is like weight. So they were getting so riled up with each other and it was causing like such like just viciousness
yeah.
that it made me like really viscerally uncomfortable. And like as a content creator, you know, the algorithm can't tell the difference between good and bad comments.
It's just
so if I want to keep going viral, I can keep standing like that in front of the camera. But to me, it wasn't worth it because of how unpleasant people were with each other.
Oh my goodness. I feel like it's just interesting when you talk about that and how triggering it was for people, because I think that is a huge, it's been a big positive and negative about physical because of, mm-hmm. You know, because it does deal with EDs and also at a time when America did not know what those were. So.
Yeah.
What I love about our show is almost the bluntness of it because there is no language for it. We're not mm-hmm. dancing around. We're not using like politically correct
terms. Yeah.
Because we're like, Sheila and I, Rose Byrne and I have like this big fight in season two at one point where she finally goes, guess what? I'm bulimic. Mm-hmm. And my character's like, so you're cheating? Because like,
right.
Greta doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, so when I read the scene, I remember when we got that script, Rose texted me that night and she was like, mate, oh my God, we're going to fight. And I was like, oh my God, it's so cruel.
Yeah.
But my character's been so pushed around, pulled back and forth by her that I'm like, I don't even, when she tells me that,
yeah.
I don't know what that means. Does that mean now like, you yeah. know, anyway.
It's such like a realistic response, I feel, for somebody who like wouldn't know the terminology in the time and
yes.
feels like baited by this person.
Yes.
To be like, oh, like, well, she was cutting corners, you know, and like not to understand it all.
Because you don't understand. You know what? A very incredibly sad, you're going to have to put a trigger warning on this episode, but a very sad fact is when Gilda Radner had a terrible eating disorder, was mm-hmm. very famous on SNL. But very, very terrible eating disorder, bulimia. And, but they didn't know it was an eating disorder. And so there are not whole articles, but there are mm-hmm. pieces of interviews with her where they talk about how she found this new great way to lose weight, where you can eat what you
want. You can eat whatever you want.
But that was the same time leading up to when we, like the time period we're talking mm-hmm. about. So people were thinking about it. Like you look at, ballerinas would smoke instead of like cigarettes are a great way to suppress your appetite. And I'm sure you've seen those things floating online of, you know, the
intermediate fasting
of the women's diet in the 70s where it was like a glass of wine and a boiled egg for breakfast and like
the military diet.
Yeah, but like
that was a big one.
Yeah,
this was like 300 calories or less every day for 3 days a week.
So it was like a real thing at that time that
mm-hmm.
my character would have looked at her and gone, so this is what you're doing, that you're not yeah. losing weight because you're exercising.
I thought you just looked like that and you were doing things better than me.
Yeah. So it's like, it's really sad. And then mm-hmm. it's a lovely way they sort of come around together and then
they learn
support each other. Right. But,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, anyway.
That brings up a good point of media literacy, though, because that's something a lot of Gen Z has been talking about. Media literacy is becoming a real problem with new shows and movies and stuff because we obviously have an education crisis. Kids are watching shows and they would see a moment like that and they would be like,
horrified.
She's a terrible person.
Right.
But you can't have a character arc if your character doesn't learn anything.
It's so funny when you say that. So I've done a lot of teaching. I love teaching. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've talked a lot about with students, especially in this culture where it's like nobody wants to be cruel to each other, which I think is wonderful, right? Mm-hmm. Culturally.
There's huge positives to that. Pendulum swing moment, though.
But if we want to tell stories, if I want to tell a story where I am supporting a marginalized person, it is not my story, it is their story. Mm-hmm. In that story, that person needs to overcome something, which mm-hmm. means somebody has to be the
Someone
bad guy.
Someone has to suck, at least for a second.
Yeah, but like this is the whole, right? Like if the whole film or the whole play or the whole whatever scene mm-hmm. is just two people being like, how are you? I honor and respect your feelings.
And I'm great.
And
we saved the world with next to no friction.
Right, so yeah. That's the thing, but like, good guys have to overcome
bad guys.
And bad guys can be complex and layered and like have a valid point of view, but
yeah,
still be doing
motivation.
A bad thing. So that to me is interesting storytelling. And then I'm like, that's what creates empathy
yeah.
and the ability to go, oh my gosh, I didn't know that's what you went through when
yeah.
you were young. And now I have
now
a
I
better
understand.
Of you as a person.
Yeah, I understand how you got there, even though I might not agree with it. I see where you ended up
but
and
I'm,
like how you started.
I think it's so cool. I really do that you're like opening my eyes to that conversation is happening because things do require context. Like we're only where we're at mm-hmm. because we weren't there.
We weren't always there.
Right.
And that's how we're progressing. And that's why I say it's like a pendulum swing moment because mm-hmm. like it's so awesome that we're overcorrecting. I just hope that we don't go too far backwards because you always swing until you meet a stasis in the middle. So we're going to go back a little bit at some point. I just hope it's not super intense, you know?
I mean, it's up to this next generation to like keep going. You know, every time, right? Paula Abdul said two steps forward, two steps back. But it's like, you know, it's like anytime you move forward a little and then you step back mm-hmm. and then you move forward. Progress is made in that way.
Yeah.
Progress doesn't just march forward because then you end up off a cliff. Like then you don't
yeah.
know you're in totally uncharted territory.
Well, and then like, what are you even fighting if it's so easily overcome, you know?
There you go. That's true.
What are you fighting? It's obviously not a problem if all you have to do is just be like, hey, stop. And people go, okay.
You know? Okay.
Cool. Like, I had no idea.
That's right.
You know? And that I don't know. Star Wars, I don't want to enrage the fandom, but people were very upset with the newer Star Wars movies
yeah.
because they were calling Rey's character a Mary Sue. And a Mary Sue is when like there's no training arc. Like they just are born awesome and they stay awesome the whole time.
But
they
wait, why
the
is
world.
That Mary Sue?
I don't actually know the root of the name.
Copy. Okay.
But I do know that that's like what it means.
Got
I
it.
Saw everyone saying it and I was like, what the hell is that?
What is a Mary
yeah,
Sue?
Yeah. And I looked
Thank
it up.
Thank God, because like I know I'm like of another generation, but I'm always like.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Okay.
So
great.
Don't worry. But
Thank
like,
you.
Yeah, people were mad because they were like, so Rey was just like living in the desert and is powerful and we get no context to why she's so awesome. And that's why like the reviews were all. Bad and like the live action Mulan, they instead of having her go through like the awesome let's get down to business they just had her born with like chi, like they made her a superhero, and so there was no development. She was just awesome the whole time and then saved the world. And so we keep seeing that because people don't want like the unpleasant chapters where like people are struggling or bad things are happening.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because it sounds like to me what you're saying is the same people who are saying, boo, she's had no struggle, are the people that they're doing that for who
yes.
are like, boo, people
boo,
shouldn't be mean
struggle.
To other people.
We shouldn't have to watch her struggle. Exactly. And so
I used to say all
doesn't
these,
make sense.
But I think I said, I mean, I hate to use all my teacher-isms, but I would say to students all the time, when caterpillars are going to become butterflies and they build the cocoon, they literally literally their entire bodies liquefy.
Yeah.
Inside, and then they rebuild. And I'm like, do you think that is a pleasant feeling? Like, it can't be.
It's gotta be terrible.
In order to become, like, to evolve into the next thing, the stronger thing, the more beautiful, whatever it is that you're moving towards, sometimes it is like
discomfort.
Yeah, like it's like dating a terrible person and your whole body does a body check. Well, if you don't date a couple of terrible people, you won't know when you meet the awesome person or whatever.
There's no context. You have no idea how awesome they are.
You have a couple of terrible jobs with awful bosses that you go, I hate doing this. When then when you find the job that's amazing that you love,
you're so grateful.
And it still might not be perfect, but you're going to have a context for, well, I know what shitty was.
There is no light without the dark.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
It's totally true.
It is true. Like, I always, anytime my friends get, like, demoralized, I tell them they're in their stump phase of life.
What does that mean?
Because when I was, like, I made it up, but, like, it's when I was, like, 8, there was, like, a cherry tree in my yard that I, like, loved because I thought it was, like, awesome. And I used to go look at it every morning. And one day I went out there and it was cut down. And it was just a stump. And I was like devastated because I was like a big like Fern Gully girl. So I was like, who killed the tree? Like, oh my God, this is literally my nightmare. And my dad was like, oh, there were beetles like eating the roots of this tree. We had to cut it down before it infected all of the other trees. Right. And I was like 8. So I was like, I don't care. Like, you know, I was
wanted
like upset.
My tree.
Yeah. And he was explaining to me like, you know, darling, we live in Texas. There's not a lot of soil here. It's just bedrock. So what that means now that we have this tree that was growing here, once we rip this up and we plant something else, it's going to be so much more beautiful because it already has the space to grow. It's already carved out the rock.
Oh my God, yeah. I might cry.
And then we planted this beautiful tree there that's now this massive like purple wisteria tree, which is now my new favorite type of tree. And so it ultimately, he was correct. There is a stump phase where it's ugly and you don't like it and you feel the death of the thing that you once loved, only to find something more beautiful.
But it carved out the space for
the.
Oh my God, Daisy, I really am very moved by this.
I think it's a really good analogy.
Yes, it carved out the space for. I'm really moved.
Yeah.
It carved out the space for something else to grow.
Yeah.
But think about talking about adversity.
Yeah, that's life.
For this little tree to have to. Carve through rock,
only to get eaten by beetles.
But to make the space for
another
tree.
But it made the space for another tree to not have to worry about it.
That's really special.
Yeah. And so like anytime anything bad is happening to me, I just think I'm just in the stump phase of this situation.
Oh, I'm going to use that.
You should. I really think like
I'm going to be like, my friend Daisy told me this story about this.
And you're going to be a beautiful wisteria tree at the end of it.
You're going to be a beautiful wisteria tree.
It's going to be incredible.
Wow.
And you were still a beautiful cherry tree before.
Yeah.
You know? There's no ugly part. It's just a stump. It's okay.
That's life.
That's life. And you go through the stump phase a million times.
Yeah.
It just keeps happening.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
But think about that for it also to like take that analogy one step further. Every time you do, it's
more and more space.
More space, bigger roots, better tree, right?
More beautiful.
Easier. Stronger tree who's like, oh, I'm learning from this environment. Well, now I'll, you know, that's evolution. I'll build a protectant against these beetles all, you know.
And then you're this giant, gorgeous redwood by the end.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah. What is your redwood? What do you want to be?
I think I am what I want to be.
You are what you want to be. That's amazing.
When I was a little kid, I always wanted to be an actor. My grandfather was, you've left me like very emotional right now.
Good.
My grandfather was in community theater. He was an amazing tap dancer and he was like a really wonderful actor. I used to go see him do shows. And so I just would like, he'd come off stage and I would like, he'd say a line of dialogue and I could like say the next line. Like I always wanted to do this. My family would do like little plays for my family and like always sing and all this stuff. So I think I took it for granted that I got to be what I want when I grow up.
You knew your dream early and you executed.
And I think I always thought everyone did and then people just didn't do it. And I know a lot of people who are like, no, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I was a kid. But I wasn't always an actor, right? I've had plenty of years of not. Like things for me really took off, I would say like 10 or so years ago. But I was always just like going at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I also was fortunate because I loved teaching. So when I wasn't acting and I was getting to do something else I really loved.
You were still fulfilled.
I was, like I'm still in that sort of creative space, like that positive space, which I think when you stay in the good space, it brings good things to you when you can.
Yeah.
So I think that's my answer. I'm very lucky.
Yeah,
but
you are
lucky. But I work really hard, you
yes.
know?
Yes. Well, it's a combination of those two things, mm-hmm. you know, luck and hard work. Do you, if you could go back in time, like, what would you tell yourself? Would you tell yourself anything?
My young self?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
What
age?
Pick any age. You can pick. You can do, like, three if you want. I don't care.
Okay. Well, I think young actor Deirdre, when I would be, like, seeing friends of mine getting roles and me mm-hmm. being like, do I suck or, like, am I not going to ever do it? I'm going to be able to tell her, you're going to do it. It's just not going to look the way you thought it was. Like, yeah. it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's just going to, you know, it's going to happen when the time is right for you. And then I think it's so funny. I have two nieces now, one who's 9 and one who's 5. And so, like, watching them go through things with friends or, mm-hmm. like, the 5-year-old told me that a girl in her class told her one day in gymnastics that her belly looked fat in her gymnastics.
What?
But I was like, she's 5. Like,
you're, you know, 5. Your, like, organs got to go somewhere.
You know how, like, your bodies go like this yeah. and this and this. So she's still not, like, not quite has her baby belly, but, yeah. like, you know what I'm talking about? But she's so, my God, this kid's so athletic. 5. And I, like, hate. I was like, so, I went, you're 5 and someone's commenting on your body.
Yeah.
Which then made me think, what is that little kid's parents
What's
saying
going
to
on
them?
With her? Exactly.
But it's like, there's so many things I would say to myself. But like, when I see them going through things, or my 9-year-old niece, if she is having a struggle with friends mm-hmm. or something, like, I'm like, that's almost the times when I feel like I'm almost able to be talking to myself at that age yeah. where I'm like, I know this sucks now, but I promise you in 2 weeks, you will not remember
yeah.
it. But right now, it feels like the worst
terrible.
Thing in the world.
It is maybe the worst thing in your world you've ever seen so
yeah.
far.
Yeah.
You know? I always think about with, like, babies crying, this is, like, such a random tangent, but I always think that, like, you know how parents are, like, sometimes, like, this baby's crying and I don't know why. I fed him, I burped him, I did everything. I think sometimes it's just the existential dread of it all.
Yeah. Like, you know? Think babies have existential dread?
I do. Just because, like, I don't think they know that's what it is, but, like, I think they do. Because, like, imagine, like, you're just in another state that you've never been in before all of a sudden, and it's so overstimulating. You would be like, what the hell? And
but
all you can do is yell?
I think it's, I mean, I don't want to, I think that's actually hilarious what you just said.
It's true.
But I don't think it's existential dread as much as, like, you learn everything by comparison. So for a baby, mm-hmm. if you're like, right now I'm like, oh, I feel the air. My knee is chilly.
Yeah.
But like, if you're a baby and you're a little chilly for the first time, you're like,
devastating.
What is this?
Yeah.
But until you go, oh, I've been chilly and I've survived.
Yeah. But you're like, this is A, the most painful thing I've ever experienced.
Yes.
This chill. B,
this hunger.
It's so scary.
Right.
Because like, what is it?
What is it?
What is it? Am I going to die? What's dying? I don't even know. I just have a feeling that something bad
is happening.
I have
to keep myself. And the only way I know to keep myself alive is to scream for
yeah.
the person who keeps me
it's
alive.
The one thing I can do. And like, so, sometimes it's like, maybe they're like, maybe just like their leg, it just feels slightly weird and they're
100%.
Freaking out, you know?
Yeah.
Could be anything.
Yes. But I don't know that the existential dread, but I think it might be an awareness of like.
I think, it's, yeah, like, I mean, in the
mortality.
System terms,
okay.
like everything is like, you're like, what the hell?
Yes. No, that's legit. I get what you're saying. It just was such I'm like imagining a baby with existential
what is life?
Dread is really funny.
What is my purpose?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I'm not sure there's at that level, but that's a good concept. You pitch that to Netflix.
A philosophical baby.
And with existential dread.
Honestly, very, very Adult Swim coded.
100%. It's very like Boss Baby or like there was a movie from the 80s called like Look Who's Talking where like the babies could talk, but the adults couldn't hear them.
And oh, that's interesting.
It was like a stupid humory movie where mm-hmm. like, you know. The babies would be like, yeah, did she give you milk today? And like, you know, like they'd all have like grown
she
up.
She gave me bottles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was like the humor of the film. But yeah, you could like, I don't know. That's a decent pitch. We should throw
it around later. We'll refine it. We'll figure it out, you know.
Before we bring it anywhere.
Philosophical babble.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. What, it, like writing wise, do you feel like you have a preferred genre that you want to get into? Or do you feel like that's a box?
I mean, anything's a box. I also think now things are so much more genre-less. Like, mm-hmm. Jerry Seinfeld just put out that Unfrosted movie, and that's, like, the first thing I can think of in a long time that was, like, this is a comedy. Like,
yeah.
Seinfeld is very clear about how he's, like, I just want to make things that make people laugh,
mm-hmm.
right? And certainly there have been, like, comedies that are out or dramas, but I think more now we see these things that are, like, like stand-up comedians doing like very serious projects.
Yeah, like Inside was funny but sad.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think I am interested in comedy. I like doing comedy, but I think I have a natural bent towards, I'm just interested in telling real stories, like things mm-hmm. that feel real to me or like interesting. But yeah, I'm like still very new at the writing thing.
Well, you're a writer. It doesn't matter how new you are.
Well, I mean like, so.
Once you're writing, I would say you're a writer.
It's true. You know? I think that's fair to some degree, but I also think, I don't know that I've done enough of anything yet to be like, this is a genre I like. I do know that I like comedy. I like being funny. And I also feel like maybe that's goal oriented. So I know if I'm like, okay, how do I make this funny? Or this is funny. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, that's you're experimenting and you're like, this is where I feel myself going.
I think right so. Now. I think so.
I like the cultural shift towards like being a little more genre-less. Like, I feel like the first like really major project that like sort of like lived in that space is like Orange is the New Black.
Yep.
Because it was considered a comedy at first and it became very serious, very important project.
Yep.
You know, but like it made sense that it would evolve from comedic to serious because the character's not taking it that serious at first. She doesn't think it's that big of a deal.
I think that also started with streaming because I think when when all you had was network programming, half hours were for comedy and mm-hmm. 1 hours were for dramas. And so like there was also just like very clear boxes things were mm-hmm. in. So when something is streaming, they still kind of have those rules or like those guidelines, but an episode can be 42 minutes or an hour 15 or like.
It opens you up to many more possibilities.
Yeah, which life is like, right? Yeah. In this same conversation we've had, like we've talked about existential babies and we've talked about like eating disorder. Like we've gone like this huge gamut of, that's life.
Yeah, it is. You know? And like that's why it feels like more real. I know that like some people I've heard like a sort of feeling of like complaint in the comedy space that like they want to go see a rom-com and have it just be light. But even with like the really classic rom-coms, it's never just been light.
Mm.
Like maybe it doesn't have as heavy beats as we have in some of them now because they're tackling issues that are closer to people's hearts and there's less fear to cover these really important topics, I think. But like if you watch like old rom-coms, like there's devastation, there's betrayal, there's sadness.
There has to be.
Otherwise,
there's no payoff if they get together
at the end. Exactly. Right? Like we're not invested. Like Moulin Rouge. That movie ain't new. That movie's devastating.
That movie is really sad.
It's so good, though.
So good.
So incredible, but so, so sad. I had a friend who would sleep over, and we would watch it, like, once a month, and my dad always knew she was at my house, because, like, you know, dads are like, oh, your friend, what the hell is in the house?
Your friend Moulin Rouge,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he would be like, upstairs typing, headphones on, and then he would just hear, like, at the intro music, there was a boy.
You'd already be crying.
And he was like, oh my God, Ryan's downstairs. Jesus Christ, I have a deadline. I can't do this.
That's so funny.
But I would watch it anyway. Is there anything we have to wrap up? Thank you so much for coming on. You've been so good.
Oh my
gosh, is there anything you need a plug?
I can't plug anything right now. There's a couple things in the works, but I can't talk about. I wish
guys,
I would
watch her.
I wish we had done this a month from now. Let's just say it that
well,
way.
We can do it again. You know,
we can do it anytime you want.
You can always come back.
I can't plug it now. So, but thank you. It's been really fun.
Dude,
they're physical awesome. On Apple TV. New Amsterdam is on Netflix. Somewhere mm-hmm. in Queens is on a bunch of platforms. There's other stuff I've done, but those are like
those are the ones that are
that
recent.
Have been floating around lately.
Okay, guys, keep an eye on her for her upcoming projects and also for our existential dread baby.
For our existential
3 years from now.
On Cartoon Network.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I ain't never seen you, that's something I know. You're dope, you're mad cool. Got a full ride to Harvard, go to SMU. You're smart, I like that. And it doesn't hurt.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.